This is the day you've been waiting for. The sun is shining, the birds are singing, and you know just what you want to do.
All you want to do is ride around Saturday.
You know, one thing I have observed over the past 10 years or so is that most horse owners and horse lovers are also dog owners and dog lovers. Hi, everybody. Rick Lamb here for The Horse Show. It's easy to understand why they feel similar needs, I think, in us. Even though the species are very, very different, they do respond to the same concepts of training, encouraging behaviors you want to see repeated, discouraging behaviors that you don't want to see repeated. So every once in a while, we do talk about dogs on The Horse Show. And today we're going to take a little side trip and do that because my guest changed the way people think about dogs. Several decades ago, he wrote a story, produced some films independent of the normal Hollywood film machine. They weren't really interested, so he had to do this on his own, all surrounding a real-life dog named Benji. And through this film, we were able to kind of get a glimpse inside Benji's mind. It was a very difficult, kind of a groundbreaking thing to be able to do in a movie with a living dog in it. But he did it. My guest is Joe Camp, the creator of Benji. Now, for the past 3 years, Joe has been kind of possessed by a love of the horse, like I have, probably like you have, as a matter of fact. And being a creative type, somebody that's compelled to create and write and share, he has written a book called The Soul of a Horse, Life Lessons from the Herd. Now, this book has taken off like a rocket. I got an advanced copy many months ago. I was knocked out by it. Look forward to talking to him. Today is the day the great Joe Camp is here to talk about The Soul of a Horse.
Thank you for listening to The Horse Show with Rick Lamb. If you have a question, request, or comment, we want to hear from you. Our fax number is area code 602-279-0980. Or if you would like to email us, the address is lambemail@aol.com. Now, back to Rick.
Welcome back, everybody. Coming to you today from beautiful Santa Ynez, California, at Intrepid Farm, site of the Light Hands Horsemanship Clinic. Ran into a gentleman here that I've been looking forward to meeting for some time, Mr. Joe Camp. Joe, welcome to The Horse Show.
It is my pleasure. Thanks, Sam. I've been looking forward to meeting you as well.
Well, we are kindred spirits, I think, in some respects, in that we're both relatively new to horses compared to some of these people that have been doing it for 50, 60, 70 years. And we've both written books about our journeys recently, and there's a lot of parallels between those two journeys. But let's set the stage. Let's help my viewers and listeners understand really who you are, because they know you, even if they don't know that they know you. And that is because of a little dog named Benji. Tell me the Benji story.
That's correct. Yeah, for the last, I guess, what now, 30, almost 35 years, I've been, you know, trying to draw you and your listeners and everybody else into the heart and soul of a dog. Telling those Benji stories. There have been 5 movies now and a bunch of television stuff. The last movie was in 2004, Benji Off the Leash, and that dog lives with us at home. Was very mad with me when I took off for Santa Ynez here and did not take her, because she usually gets to go along. She thinks she's going on some benefit or something. And so now we've shifted somewhat and trying to draw you into the heart and soul of a horse and telling stories once again, now using the horse. And it's one that I found very fascinating, because it's the story of my wife and I is one of the stories in the book, you know, complete, totally. You know, you are an experienced person with horses compared to us. I mean, we're less than 3 years into this. And yeah.
Well, let me stop you for just a second, because I don't want to leave Benji quite yet.
Okay.
Because this is a fascinating story in itself. You're probably tired of telling it. You've told it so many times, I imagine. Benji is a real dog. This isn't some stunt dog or some, you know, group of dogs that all play the same part. Benji is a real living, breathing dog that came into your life. How?
Well, like I say, about 35 years ago, I was had been watching a Disney show at night and seen a little clip from Lady and the Tramp, which was one of my favorite movies as a kid. And my wife and I, while we were doing the dishes, were talking about I wonder if it'd be possible to tell a story from the dog's point of view, you know, where the people are the props, like Lady and the Tramp, but do it with real dogs and, you know, not Rex Allen saying, and now Benji thinking, you know, that sort of thing. And we really talked it into a corner. I said, you know, without dialogue, how are you going to do that? And I stayed up that night reading a book, and our little Yorkshire Terrier, whose name was Benji, was in my lap for a while and then jumped down onto the floor. And I became intrigued with the way he was reacting to a siren going off down the street or a dog barking or something, and started watching up close. And, you know, finally I was down on the floor on my hands and knees, huddled in a corner, you know, saying, oh, like, and I was afraid of him. And he's looking at me like, what in the world is the matter with you? And I went to bed that night, you know, saying, dogs do talk. They absolutely do. If you're up there close and personal and paying attention with their eyes and with their emotions, they tell you everything that you want to know about how they're feeling, what they're going to do next, what's going on in their heads. And I was getting up at that time. I was working for an advertising agency, so I'd get up and write from 4 till 6 in the mornings and was working on something, I don't know what. But the next morning I got up and shoved everything aside and wrote the entire Benji story, which was, I mean, I write a page an hour, you know. It was an amazing experience because I wrote this, I don't know, 8 or 9 page treatment in 2 hours. Took it in, read it to my wife as I was waking her up, and tears were coming down her eyes at the end of the thing. And I said, yes. And only 7 years later, we finally were able to produce the movie.
I was going
to
say, it wasn't received quite as you had hoped it would be.
No, the story idea was, you know, turned down by everybody in Hollywood. 4 or 5 years later, we were able to maneuver ourselves out of the advertising agency into a commercial production business, and actually go about the business a year or two after that of raising the money privately for the movie. Made what we thought was a very wonderful, heartwarming, new kind of movie, because a dog was acting on the screen for the first time ever. You know,
was it your Benji?
No, not the Yorkshire Terrier. With the name came through, but not the dog. We had to go out to Hollywood and search, and we went through trainer after trainer, you know, saying, you know, this is going to be a very unique kind of movie. And every trainer says, not possible, you can't do this. It's not, you can't do this. No, you can't turn a dog loose on a set and expect him to act natural. He's got to be looking at me and paying attention to me. And finally got to Frank Inn, who you know, is a trainer of all the animals, somebody Beverly Hillbillies and Petticoat Junction and Green Acres, Arnold the Pig, all that stuff. And Benji, the dog that he showed me, had actually been on Petticoat Junction for, I don't know, 10, 12 years, however long it was, and was in retirement. He was 13 years old. And it was the opposite look of what I anticipated, you know, because Lady and the Tramp, Tramp is all scruffy, right, and Lady's all soft and pretty. And this is the way Higgins, who was his name at the time, was all soft and pretty. He wasn't, you know, short and scruffy like Tramp. But I immediately changed my thinking when I saw this dog and saw the way Frank worked with him. And Frank's attitude to the whole thing was, you know, I don't know how it'll be done because nobody's ever done it before, but we'll give it everything we got. And that's all you can ask of anybody, you know. And so then I went back and wrote the script after casting the dog. And
was the script pretty true to your original treatment?
It was absolutely true, with two exceptions. One, the original treatment was set inner city, back alleys, and we moved it into a Victorian country town in North Texas that was a very photogenic kind of place. And the other addition was about 15 minutes when we got to the end of the movie, got it all cut, got everything done, and it was 10 or 12 minutes too short. And I had to go back and rewrite more stuff, go raise some more money to do the additional production, and it turned out to be one of the best scenes in the picture.
Obviously, you've made the transition now, focused-wise, to horses. And you've got this new book called The Soul of a Horse, Life Lessons from the Herd. Why did you jump into this at this level? I mean, so not only your own personal journey, but immediately start writing about it.
Well, I think it came out of the passion. You know, I found it, as I've said earlier, you know, I'm a storyteller. You know, I'm not a historian, you know, and I don't, not terribly detailed about things, but I am a storyteller. And the deeper we got into this, you know, it all began very innocently and accidentally with a birthday gift that Kathleen gave me of a trail ride. You know, the last Benji movie, you know, which I think is one of the best ones, if not the best one we did not do as well against the Hollywood. It was independently distributed, just like the first one was, and because Hollywood had turned that one down, and you go up against the millions and millions of dollars they're spending out there now, and you know, it doesn't work as well as it did back in the 70s and the 80s. And so I was kind of depressed about, you know, it not doing as well as some of the other movies. And Kathleen tried to pull me out of it by giving me something else to think about. And wow, did she, because we went out on this trail ride and 3 weeks later we owned three horses. And I can promise you that a trail ride is not a good reason to own three horses. It doesn't, you know. And so we, you know, as I say in the book, we should have called them impulsive, compulsive, and, you know, because that it began us on a journey as complete, total idiot neophytes. We didn't have a clue of what we were supposed to be doing with these guys. It was just, you know, oh, this is great. We need to have these horses. And I'm one of those who would stop by a pasture and watch a foal, you know, frolic in the pasture, okay, and just wish, you know, all my life. And so it's always kind of been latent there. I think most people have that latency, and some, this trail ride somehow triggered it. And as we dug through this and asking everybody that we knew who had experience, you know, what do you do? Why you do this? What's going on? Everything we were finding out was coming back without logic, you know. And the more I dug into it, the more I began to figure that what in the world is going on in this world of horses? And it took us, you know, about a year and a half to get to that point of feeling confident enough in what we were beginning to dig through, having started with a clean plate instead of all the baggage that, right, you know, so many horse people, and that's the way my daddy did it, and mm-hmm, his daddy before him, and that sort of thing. And so it got quickly beyond the natural horsemanship, you know, the training and teaching. I call it teaching now rather than training, because training, you know, kind of looks as a somebody trying to dominate somebody else. But it got all the way into horse care and, you know, feet and everything else. And what I finally came down to was the fact that you know, genetically, every horse on the planet's the same, whether they're out in the wild or whether they're living in a stall. And that demands a certain kind of, you know, care and feeding and handling of these horses for their genetics alone.
My guest is Joe Camp, author of the hot new book, The Soul of a Horse, Life Lessons from the Herd. And we'll kind of focus on the life lessons part when we come back. This is The Horse Show. I'm Rick Lamb. Stay with us.
The Horse Show with Rick Lamb is a copyrighted production of Lamb Chop Studios, Phoenix, Arizona. Unauthorized use is strictly prohibited.
Flies can make horses and their owners miserable. That's why for 30 years, Spalding Labs has offered an effective pesticide-free solution, Fly Predators. These tiny beneficial insects eliminate the next generation of flies without bothering people or animals. Most horse owners who try Spalding Fly Predators use them again year after year. So do yourself a favor and check them out. Visit flypredators.net or call 1-888-282-7262. That's 1-888-282-7262. Some horses have special dietary needs. That's why Purina Mills developed new WellSolve Low Starch and WellSolve Weight Control horse feed formulas. WellSolve is the most advanced, most researched product line in Purina Mills equine history. These unique diets are backed by over 6 years of research involving more than 8,700 individual tests and over 7,500 feeding trials. To learn more about WellSolve, contact your veterinarian, visit WellSolveEquine.com, or see your nearest certified Purina Mills dealer. Hi, horse owners. The Featherlite Perfect Fit System is an exciting way to customize your trailer around your life and your horses. And now you can select from a new collection of features and options. The 2009 Featherlite models offer more innovations, including a redesigned swing-out saddle rack. New Metalist Series options include frameless windows that will give your trailer a dramatic and distinctive look. Remember, too, that Featherlite's trailers were redesigned with sleek new Wave side panels last year. New for 2009 models Horse owners can select to have the wave panels polished for an even more incredible exterior. Interior LED strip lighting is also a new option to make the horse area even brighter. These and many other new features and options add style and convenience to your horse trailer. To discover the trailer fit for you, see your Featherlite dealer or visit www.fthr.com for more information or to find your nearest dealer. Featherlite Trailers. Your life, your trailer, your way.
Every month, there's hands-on advice from the pros in Horse and Rider, the how-to magazine for Western riding. Call now and get 2 years for the price of one, just $24. 1-800-829-3340.
In August Horse and Rider, you'll learn how a horse's eyesight differs from your own, how to nail your lead changes every time, and how to make the transition from horse shoes to going barefoot. Subscribe to Horse and Rider today and save. Call 1-800-829-3340. Don't go through another winter without heated automatic waterers for your horses. Right now is a great time to install them. The brand I use and recommend is Ritchie, R-I-T-C-H-I-E. Since 1921, Ritchie has built the most durable and trouble-free livestock waterers available, backed by a 10-year warranty. To learn more, visit RitchieFount.com or call 866-534-7492. Do yourself and your horses a favor. Check out Ritchie, because Ritchie waters them right. Folks, you can now buy The Revolution in Horsemanship at ricklam.com. It's just $24.95 plus shipping, and I'll be happy to personalize it for you. That's www.ricklam.com.
The Horse Show with Rick Lamb is here every week at this time, so tell a friend.
You know how it works, folks. Word-of-mouth advertising, that's the best kind. We do appreciate your help. My guest is Joe Camp, author of The Soul of a Horse. I said at the beginning that we were kind of kindred spirits in a way, because I have a similar story in that I kind of started in this industry with a clean slate, having been a city boy. My only experiences were, maybe once or twice a year, we'd go to a grandparent's place and they would, one of the cousins would bring a pony along or something like that. So I didn't have to unlearn a bunch of stuff either, as you did. And then you find we both are very fortunate in that we landed in this at a time when teaching systems are developing and talented teachers are out there that are presenting it in a way that makes sense. There's a body of education available. There's courses that you can take. There's consistency. There's a certain amount of logic to it. There are kind of rules that you can ingrain and work from. In this whole universe, you were drawn to one man in particular, Monty Roberts. Why Monty?
Well, we began there, but I have every DVD that Clinton and Pirelli have done and most of their books. And I became obsessive about, I'm 69 right now. I guess I was 66 at the time. And so who knows? I don't have 40 years to, to gather all that experience. But Monty, we were making our kind of obligatory trip to Boot Barn before the horses came to get all the stuff that we needed, and Kathleen picked up a magazine or newspaper or something while we were there, and we were taking the kids out for hamburgers afterwards and just sitting there eating, and she read me this story about Monty Roberts, who I knew vaguely, and so I immediately went home and ordered his join-up DVD, which, as and probably most of your listeners do, is, a 30-35 minute traipse with a brand-new horse from 0 to 100 with rider and saddle and the whole thing, without any pressure, without any, cruelty or violence. And I was just astounded. And so when Cash, my guy, who's on the cover of the book, got to our place along with the two others that we bought, the three at once, that's the first thing I did is take him down to the round pen and try this joint up thing. And I was scared to death. And I was doing everything I could. Everybody says, keep your adrenaline down, because they read it. And so I'm sitting there. That's all I'm thinking about, is that when the time finally came, and I'm not a big fan of rejection, so I was really afraid to make that final move of saying, okay, do you accept me? Do you trust me? And giving Cash the choice, because what happens if he said no? And I finally did. And when he came over and touched me on the shoulder, I just broke down crying and lost it completely. And at that moment, everything changed from horse owner to horse companion and making the best shot I could at being horse leader.
Well, that is told so beautifully in your book, and it's just rare to find somebody who really has the art of riding down. And I would say that Joe Camp has that. He's riding from his heart. Really good riders, to me, I'm not even aware I'm reading. It's like the ideas are just flowing into my brain. And that's the kind of writer that Joe is. And these are the kind of stories. They will absolutely touch you. And it is kind of funny because Joe and I put out the same kind of book about the same time. And both of them, mine being called Human to Horseman, both of them are kind of self-effacing in a way, because you tell about the mistakes that you made and the shortcomings that you had and the ignorance that you had entering this and what you've learned and where you've come on your journey, same as I did. It's a little bit of that compulsion to share ideas that I think we both have, but it's also cathartic in a way. It's also, when you write about this, you're processing it, you're reliving it. It's changing. It's doing something in your own brain.
I have the feeling
that's part of the reason that you were so eager to get this book in print so quickly.
Well, I've also found it's harder to do in real, in face to face with somebody. But if you can involve them emotionally, as I know you know from your writing, I can tell that when you involve them emotionally within a concept, it puts them into a position that, they're not being, preached at. They're saying, wow, this is right. This works. And we've heard this come back to us so much off of this book that, we're really moving a lot of people. And that's the goal of the book, is to move people to do better for the horse.
And of course, they see themselves in the place that you were when you first started on this journey. And they're saying, gee, there are other people out there that don't have all the answers, just like I don't have all the answers. There are other people out there that are frightened. They're worried that they're going to make a mistake. They're fearful of getting hurt. I mean, all of these are common, almost universal themes. But somebody coming into this kind of new looks around and says, well, gee, everybody else seems to know so much, and they seem to have so much experience and ride so much better, and they're not worried about getting hurt. And then you find out that really we're all the same. We all share those same concerns.
Yeah, and Kathleen, of course, in this book, which I know you've gotten, you understand what she's been going through. She was scared to death on the trail ride that she gave to me, and I had no clue. I mean, we were deep into it before I realized that she was petrified of these beasts, and it's taken her quite a while. And she let herself be exposed in this book too, because I told her story as well as mine, and as well as, there's also a running story of about a wild herd that's through this thing, and they all tend to reflect each other and balance themselves in what we were learning and where we were going with it. And Kathleen now, I'm so proud to watch her out in the pasture with these guys and being a leader and, right in the middle of all of them on a cold, blustery day, and she's just absolutely comfortable.
Well, it's very, very empowering once you get past it. But I suppose the thing that I don't want people to ever do is be embarrassed about being afraid.
Right.
Because, and I like the thinking of John Lyons on this, your fear is your natural survival instinct at work. In fact, it's something to be celebrated because it means that your antenna are working correctly.
Right.
If you're feeling fear, there's a reason. Your subconscious is picking up something. You sense that you don't have control in a situation, and those are good things that you feel that way. And fear dissipates naturally when you start feeling you have more control over a situation. That comes to a great extent from just learning more about this animal.
That's right.
And starting to have some positive experiences, as you describe in your book, especially that join-up moment you described right there. I mean, that not only emotional for you, had to be tremendously empowering. Like, gee, I really can do this.
Yeah, and when you give the horse the choice, I know a lot of people laugh at this, but when you give the horse the choice rather than take that choice from him to say, I want to be with you, I trust you, everything changes. All of ours have done that, and I've got one that was, just a cathartic case. It absolutely wasn't there. And when the join-up finally happened and she knew it was her choice, and it was accepted, she was 180 degrees from what she was from that moment on. It was just, it's just fascinating to me the way it works. And we spend an enormous amount of time out in the pasture just sitting on a rock, you know, watching, letting them, you know, associate with us as they choose, and watching the way they deal with each other, and watching that language and so forth. And you learn so much. And that was why it's called Life Lessons from the Herd, really, because, you know, one of the big lessons for life for us was get over on the other side of the lead rope when you want a relationship, whether it's with you or your wife or your kids or your boss or your employees or whatever. And suddenly everything gets better when you look at it from the other perspective rather than from yours. What do you want to get out of it? Now, what are they, what are their hopes on getting out of this relationship? Then everything changes.
Yeah, that's that empathy thing at work, trying to kind of see it from the horse's point of view. And the other thing I like that you said, and I think we'll close on this today, is just this idea of kind of getting quiet and kind of just observing and thinking about what you see, spending time in the presence of horses, but not trying to affect them by your presence, just being there and watching and observing and trying to really get a sense of what their world is like. Without asking anything of them. I mean, I think that's square one. If I was to give somebody a square one on this journey, it would be just go observe. Don't jump in and immediately start trying to change horses or ride them or do anything. Just try and figure out what this beast is about.
Begin at the beginning.
That is a good bit of advice. My guest has been Joe Camp. The name of the book is The Soul of a Horse, Life Lessons from the Herd. And I suspect you have a website where they can get that. Besides, it's in every bookstore. But what website?
TheSoulOfAHorse.com.
TheSoulOfAHorse.com.
Or even if you can't remember that, Benji.com, and you can cross-link over.
All right. My guest again has been Joe Camp. Joe, thanks for being with us today.
It's my pleasure.